From the Gettysburg and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Ben Ponce, and this is On Target.
I'm Gari Mangala, and today On Target, we will be discussing the end of the Gettysburg Great Campaign and the investigation into a DUI on campus.
Then Gari will sit down with Grace Wenzel, the chair of the Student Senate's Information Technology Committee. Stay with us. And let's start today's news segment talking about the conclusion of the seven-year, $150 million Gettysburg Great Campaign. Gari, I understand they actually exceeded the goal of $150 million.
Yeah, they actually raised $160 million for the campaign.
Yeah, and so that was part of a seven-year, as I mentioned, seven-year campaign, the last 4 years of which have been in the sort of public phase. It's sort of been a project that President Janet Morgan Riggs has spearheaded into her retirement, and Bob Callan, the Vice President of Development Alumni and Parent Relations, has also spearheaded into his retirement. He's retiring October 5th. We'll be sitting down with him next week on the podcast to talk about the campaign and, you know, the college's financial future more broadly. But on Saturday evening, there was a big event. There were fireworks on campus. Where were you when the fireworks went off, Gari?
I tried to get there. I was at home, and I heard the fireworks going off. And by the time I ran outside, the finale was happening. And by the time I was in view of the fireworks, they were over.
Yeah, it was about a five-minute presentation of
fireworks. Yeah, I heard you were there the entire night, though, Ben.
Well, the Wind Symphony did play during the opening of the event, and then again at the closing. However, in between, we were not, you know, in the room.
Yeah, definitely. But,
it was an interesting event. There were a lot of event staff running around. I would be intrigued to know the total price tag on this event to celebrate, you know, raising some money. But I imagine that it was at least subsidized by some event contributions by alumni or whomever in particular. So anyway, it was an interesting event. $160 million, much of that money going to support student scholarships, some going to support faculty development, as well as some other initiatives. Now, if you want to put $160 million in perspective, Harvard just completed a capital campaign of its own that raised more than $9 billion, shattering a record for college campaigns that was previously held by Stanford with $6 billion. Harvard's $9 billion campaign, I believe, is supporting 150 endowed professorships and something else. I read somewhere, and I'm not 100% sure if I'm getting these numbers right, but that money could support full tuition for every Harvard student for like 18 years or something.
It's ridiculous.
It's three times the GDP of South Sudan raised in that campaign. Anyway, Gettysburg, though, the $160 million, a record-setting figure for the college. The previous campaign under Gordon Holland cracked $100 million. And I know that fundraising prowess is certainly going to be something that the Presidential Search Committee is looking for in a replacement for President Riggs, who has estimated that she spends more than 60% of her time on fundraising, which is a pretty significant number.
Yeah, I sat down with Joe Lynch, and he was telling me that, you know, fundraisers come and go, so, which is one of the reasons that we had such a big celebration for it this weekend. It's not like we're not going to be fundraising again ever, you know. It's going to come up again. And when we were speaking to Charlie Scott a couple of weeks back, he was saying we want someone just like JMR who is willing to really work to get a number like this for the college.
Right. And historically, the college has struggled to keep pace with some of our peer institutions with respect to endowment. And you know, I think one comment I've heard is that while Gettysburg was graduating preachers and teachers, other schools were graduating doctors and lawyers. And to some extent, that is true that the Lutheran affiliation of Gettysburg College did train a lot of pastors and such back through much of the college's history, such that alumni were not necessarily in as high earning potential fields as some other of our peer institutions. However, I don't think that's so much the case anymore. And Gettysburg's endowment is still well below most of our peer institutions. Schools such as Dickinson, Franklin, and Marshall are two that come to mind immediately. So this campaign will certainly help in that regard, but I don't think it will close the gap completely. And that's something that the new president will undoubtedly have at the forefront of his or her mind upon taking office. Other news. What else we have, Gari?
Well, Ben, this week you posted an article about a DUI and the investigation into the DUI. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. Indeed, I did. So this article, this report, is the result of an 11-month investigation by the Gettysburgian that began under the tenure of our former editor-in-chief and has continued, and it's something that involved several open records requests under the Pennsylvania Right to Know law. And in any case, based on my reporting, we have concluded, the college has concluded an investigation into a DUI incident that occurred last October, in which a member of the Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity, whom we referred to in the article by his first name, Jonathan. We can talk about more about that later, but he got behind the wheel of a car while he was drunk. His blood alcohol was 0.2 something, which is more than twice the legal limit if he was 21, but in fact he was 19, so that's more than 10 times the legal limit. And so as, you know, he was driving this car, he eventually flipped the car down on campus, down near the Jaeger Center on Lincoln Avenue. And luckily, no one was hurt. However, the college conducted a somewhat limited investigation. In fact, John Allen, the director of student activities in Greek life, said that the college was not able to conduct a proper investigation because the police conducted its investigation first, and the college has an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, with the Gettysburg Borough Police that it will not conduct an investigation of its own so long as the police investigation is ongoing. And so with all of that, the college was not able to conduct extensive interviews to determine whether the fraternity should have been found responsible for a violation of college policy with respect to serving underage students alcohol, and no sanctions were imposed against the fraternity. Now, I did speak to Michael DeFeo, the president of SAE, and he emphasized that the fraternity, kind of on its own volition, now takes the car keys of its members on Friday evenings before the festivities begin and returns them Saturday morning and then collects them again Saturday evening and returns them on Sunday morning. They're locked away during the parties. And so that was in direct response to this incident. But I think there are still folks on campus who have questions about why the college was unable to conclude, using the more likely than not preponderance of the evidence standard, that underage serving happened, given that Jonathan told police he was drinking at SAE and he was 19.
Yeah, and I do remember within the last week of you finishing up this report, there were a lot of conversations that we had among the staff, the editorial board, about what to do about anonymity and about making sure that we weren't overly critiquing the student. We ended up just using his first name, Jonathan. Can you talk a little bit about what went into that decision, Ben?
Yeah, I met with Jonathan a couple weeks ago, and he had requested that we not use his name at all. And for me, it ultimately came down to a balancing test between between acknowledging that if you were to Google him, his full name, if this was the first article that came up, which it may well have been, that would obviously have detrimental effect for a long time. And that, you know, this has, on the other hand, this is a public matter. I mean, it's public record. you know, no violations of the Family Education Records Privacy Act, or FERPA, were committed in the reporting of the story. You know, all public records were used. And so with that, and the fact that, frankly, getting behind the wheel of a car on campus and driving recklessly down the road puts the campus community in danger. And so I think that there is to some extent a need for public accountability there. So we went with, I don't want to make it seem like I punted. I decided that we would publish his first name only. And that's kind of how we got to that decision.
Yeah, and now I guess we wait to see how the rest of this year plays out with not just SAE, but all fraternity life on campus, and seeing, you know, what precautions are put in place.
Yeah, certainly on the heels of some of the editorials that, or excuse me, some of the op-eds that have been running in the Gettysburgian, I think that there is a growing sense of something needing to at least be looked at with respect to the role of Greek life on campus. I know that's something that the Board of Trustees has considered recently. They've been working on issues relating to the student social experience, both including and independent of Greek life. And so, you know, I think the elephant in the room is that for most of the college's history, Greek life was even more prevalent than it is now, and so that many, if not most, alumni, particularly those who are at the point in their careers where they have potentially made some money to contribute to the college, are, you know, fairly attached to a Greek organization or have at least memories of one, and so would have some concerns. I'm not saying that it's not something that can or even should be done, but would have some concerns about restructuring or eliminating Greek life on the Gettysburg College campus. And, you know, the other issue is a housing issue. Is, you know, one advantage to the college of the Greek system is that it takes several hundred people and essentially has them living off campus. And the college, of course, doesn't have housing to accommodate all of those people. So, you know, if there were to be an end or a restructuring in some sense of Greek life, they would have to do something about the housing. Some of the chapters' houses are owned by the college, but many are owned by alumni organizations who, you know, may not be keen to sell to the college or to anyone, frankly. And so, you know, Gettysburg, which prides itself on being a four-year residential college, you know, would have to think about that.
Yeah, and I know that Charlie Scott, when he came on the podcast, talked about how that's something that the Presidential Search Committee is looking into, too, for a president who is willing to really, discuss with the campus community what there is that needs to be fixed throughout Greek life. We were talking, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago now, about Liam Kerr's editorial, and we both, I think, agree that maybe disbanding all of Greek life isn't the answer here, but it seems like a lot of the campus community does think that there needs to be something that is done about all of this.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Absolutely.
With respect to that issue. Other news and notes, what else is happening on campus?
Well, on the topic of the Presidential Search Committee, they recently posted the prospectus on the Gettysburg website. I talked to Charlie Scott earlier today, and he was saying that this document will be used as kind of an advertisement on the website for people that are, like, looking at a job on Gettysburg campus, but it's also going to be what Russell Reynolds, the search firm that we've hired to assist the college in finding the next president. They will be using this document to send out to applicants and really just hitting the pavement to decide who would be a good fit for president. They said that the top three things that really went into this prospectus from the forums and the survey, which has gotten over 2,000 responses, has been, being able to really help with the affordability and accessibility of the college for students, the recruitment and retention of faculty, and just overall leadership of a president to, you know, keep pushing Gettysburg forward in terms of academics and extracurriculars and, you know, really creating a campus that we can be proud of.
Right. And I mean, in your reading of this prospectus, do you get the sense that they are looking for someone who has been a faculty member elsewhere, who has, you know, coming from academia or is coming from outside of academia? I know this is something we asked and got an answer that they're open to anyone, but do you think that the prospectus has narrowed that in any way?
I think that they're still extremely open-minded about what they want. I think that also has to depend. Charlie was saying that, you know, next month they want to have about 20 or so, well, I guess 2 months from now, want to have about 20 or so applicants to have face-to-face interviews. And I think until then, until they have to narrow it down to that 20, I think it makes sense for them to be extremely open-minded about it, because in the end, it's like if you're lowering that applicant pool to just faculty or just people outside of academia in general, you could be missing a really great addition to the college. And it seems like, from my reading of the prospectus, it does seem that, you know, that could come from anywhere.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it'll be something I'll certainly continue to follow.
Absolutely. Ben, last week, I know that the Fielding Center, in conjunction with Eisenhower Institute, hosted a debate in Mara Auditorium. I know you went to that debate on Thursday. Do you want to tell me a little bit about how that went?
Sure. And so last Thursday, indeed, John Yoo, formerly the Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Counsel in the Bush administration, and Alberto Cole, who formerly served as a Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, I believe, in the first Bush administration. John Yoo was in the second Bush administration. And in any case, they are now both law professors. Yoo is at UC Berkeley, and Alberto Cole is at DePaul. They were on campus to debate whether the president can unilaterally launch a war without approval from Congress. John Yoo said yes. Alberto Cole said no. About 100 people came out to hear the debate, and I thought it was an interesting conversation. It was, as you mentioned, hosted by the Fielding Center for Presidential Leadership Study, for whom, full disclosure, I work. And so it was a neat debate. John Yoo was someone that I had met over the summer, and he's most famous for authoring the so-called torture memos, the legal memoranda that authorized or at least said it was legal for the United States government to use enhanced interrogation techniques such as waterboarding on suspected enemy combatants or terrorists during the second Bush administration. And so that's his claim to fame, I suppose you could say. But in any case, that was not the subject of this matter. It didn't come up. And so it was a well-oiled, well-focused debate. They've done this debate elsewhere, and I thought it was a fascinating conversation and, you know, certainly a timely topic. In closing, they suggested that in a couple years they'd come back and debate whether the president has the power to pardon himself, foreshadowing that that may, you know, be a thing. All right, that's as political as we're going to get on Target this week. We'll be right back with the Bullet Report, followed by Gari's interview with Grace Wenzel. It's time for the Bullet Report, where unfortunately it looks like we did quite a bit of losing this week. However, not at the beginning. The women's golf team finished first of 3 at the McDaniel Tri-Match. The men's golf team finished first of 18 at the Elizabethtown Fall Invitational. The men's soccer team defeated Lebanon Valley 2-1. The field hockey team defeated McDaniel 6-2. The women's soccer team defeated McDaniel 2-1, and then the losing began. The volleyball team got its first loss of the season 3-2 to McDaniel. The women's cross-country team finished 5th of 7 at the Dickinson Longshore Invitational. Invitational, the men's cross-country team finished 4th of 5. The field hockey team lost to Ursinus 3-1. The football team lost to McDaniel 25-1. Then the winning ways continued. Volleyball defeated Ursinus 3-1. The women's soccer team defeated Ursinus 2-0. And the men's soccer team knocked off Johns Hopkins 2-1. Winning, losing, winning. Thus endeth the Bullet Report.
And we are back with Grace Wenzel, the head of the IT committee for Student Senate. Hi, Grace. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Do you want to tell me a little bit about yourself?
So, as you said, I'm the head of the IT committee for Senate. I'm also involved with the College Democrats. I'm the Senate representative for that group. And, yeah, it's a pretty good time.
Yeah, awesome. So I know you got elected to Student Senate this year, but last year you did spend a lot of time helping create the website that they have now, GettysburgStudentSenate.org. And now you, I believe, are the runner of that website.
Yes, that is correct.
First of all, congratulations on creating the new website.
Thank you.
What is that like, creating a body like that?
So I had a lot of help from the previous IT committee head, August Umholtz. He recently graduated last year. He's doing really well. He has his job in New Hampshire, so I'm really happy for him. But with the new updates, obviously we had to change a lot because Senate changed itself. There's new positions, there's, you know, new people in previous positions, but the structure of Senate also changed, so therefore the structure of the website had to change. And I worked a lot over the summer, kind of trying to compensate for things I did know, some things we didn't know, because, you know, the senators have to vote. So, you know, it's kind of an ongoing process. You have to take what you can get when it comes to you, and whatever somebody shares with me, I try to incorporate it as promptly as possible, but, you know, sometimes it's not always super easy when nobody shares anything with you, but usually it's pretty swift. It's not too complicated.
Absolutely. And then beyond that, I know you do work with IT in terms of the entire college.
Right.
So I know that, you know, kids have been having issues with Wi-Fi and things like that, and you meet, I think, every other week with IT in the college?
Yes. So I recently met with the IT committee and the Board of Trustees subunit for their IT committee as well over this weekend. And basically the whole Wi-Fi issue is a complex one because it not only requires the college to input more money, but it also needs to be more efficient because obviously technology is extremely important on campus with work and, you know, just kind of like relaxing, even for entertainment purposes. So trying to compensate for how technology evolves so quickly is difficult, especially when the money isn't necessarily being given. So I would say they're working on it, but unfortunately, it's probably never going to be up to the par that everybody wants it to be.
Absolutely.
But they're trying. They work really hard. And I have a lot of respect for everybody over in IT, GTech, you know, everybody over there. They always work hard, always try to keep the college and students' interests at hand, always. And if you have any problems regarding IT, head over to GTech, talk to me. You know, I'm always open to suggestions. I can always, you know, bring it up. But they're also looking towards new projects, and I'm looking forward to helping that out, too.
And as we are recording this, it's Monday, September 24th, so we're going to have Senate tonight at 7,
yes.
And hopefully we will be having a bit more of a discussion about the constitutional changes, one of which would combine your committee with public relations. If that goes through, can you tell me a little bit about what that's going to be like?
So if that goes through, the IT committee will be combined with public outreach. And basically, I look forward to, you know, working with whoever I will be working with if this does go through tonight. I don't really foresee any major changes with my role. I'll still be going to meetings. I'll still be, you know, doing my job with the website. I might be helping out, you know, trying to get more public interest in certain Senate activities, certain events. But otherwise, it's just going to kind of be a little bit more work, but not too much, because I'm pretty sure that whoever is the chair of the committee now will end up, you know, working with me as well. So the transition will just kind of be more collaborative and we'll be in it together. So hopefully that'll make things less stressful.
Absolutely. And then beyond your role in the Student Senate, I do know you said earlier you're extremely involved with the College Democrats. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do there?
So basically, I'm pretty sure most people have heard about our Register People to Vote campaign. Our goal is to get 300 new people registered here in Gettysburg, and it has been officially confirmed as of yesterday that the Cub Ballroom will be reserved for voting in the national elections and the elections locally. And we will be the precinct for Ward 2, so that means the surrounding community will also be here too. And that's obviously really convenient for students because they can just run over in between class. You know, it won't really take that long. All you need is your ID or even your student ID to get into the precinct, which is obviously, you know, like kind of hard to get permission for, but we have. And hopefully with the Cub being redone and more access to the ballroom now, it's going to, you know, prompt more people to register. We're a little over halfway towards our goal with a few more weeks left. So we're going to get into some, you know, final pushes towards those people to get registered. And hopefully, you know, I think we'll do it. We'll definitely do it. It's just going to, you know, take some extra time. So remember the last four digits of your Social Security, because that's what you need.
And I do know that College Dems has partnered with Democracy Matters in this goal, right?
Yes, definitely. Democracy Matters has helped us tremendously. And I really have to shout out Hannah, who runs Democracy Matters. She's been phenomenal through this whole process. She's reserved Cub tables for us. She's, you know, come to our meetings as we've, you know, been to hers. And she's really just kind of helped push this initiative further than just a partisan looking thing, because that's part of the issue. People look at College Dems as a partisan organization, which it is. And having that push to register people to vote is harder when you're not necessarily a self-defined Democrat and you see Democrats trying to register to vote. Now, we've been trying to push the fact that this is a nonpartisan effort. We want everybody to register no matter how you fall on the political spectrum. But the fact that Democracy Matters has, you know, tag-teamed with us, that it's helped the image a little bit. And I'm really glad. So that's going to be awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, I do know that College Dems does have a lot of nonpartisan efforts, like registering to vote. You guys also do Young Voters Day.
Of course.
But on the other hand, you do partisan efforts. I do know tomorrow you guys will be having a bit of a walkout at 1, correct?
Actually, that... So there's a few people from our organization that are going to do it. We didn't start the event. Mm-hmm. And again, if people want to do it, I encourage... If people, you know, really feel strongly about, you know, the recent Supreme Court nominee allegations against Kavanaugh, and if you're really, you know, like affected by this and feel strongly about the issue, I encourage anybody who wants to walk out. But of course, if, you know, there's any conflict or anything, that's a personal choice. And of course, College Democrats as a whole support, you know, any movements to try to, you know, further equality for women and, you know, try to spread a bigger light on the issues that women face in today's society and how, you know, Dr. Ford and Ramirez have been treated due to these allegations that they've put forth. Kavanaugh is completely terrible. Dr. Ford was, you know, has received death threats. She's been removed from her home along with her family due to these threats. And, you know, that's completely unacceptable. No matter where you fall, you don't try to harm any other being. And like I said, we support fully this movement. But again, it's a personal decision that everybody can make for themselves.
Spoken like a true diplomat.
Thank you.
And in terms of just other things that are coming down the pipe for College Dems and Student Senate, anything else you'd like to plug?
So the College Dems are having a panel called Women's Rights Under Attack on October 4th. It's a Thursday night, and we're having Kate Michaelman, who was the president of NARAL, come back. She's been to the college before. She's a good friend with college Democrats, but she's also bringing her friend Carol E. Tracy, who's a lawyer who has been instrumental in many Supreme Court cases fighting for women's health care, women's rights, and she's currently the executive director of the Women's Project Law. So we're very excited to have them here. It's going to be in Cub 260 at 7 p.m., and if you can come on out, that'll be fantastic. We're expecting to have, you know, some refreshments. They're going to have some really, you know, insightful things. Kate Michaelman is just a very wonderful woman. She's very knowledgeable on the subject. She testified during the Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill investigations. And she's very good friends with many politicians, such as Hillary Clinton. And, you know, she's just a very interesting woman to listen to because she's had so many experiences in Washington and really just trying to help other women not go through what she went through when she faced having to get an abortion or not. And she had to have her husband actually give her permission to do so. And that's a very powerful story. And even if you don't necessarily agree with what they're talking about, you know, it's a good opportunity to, you know, see what the other side is thinking, see what other people are saying, and, you know, just educate yourself. And if you don't agree, again, that's fine, but come on out anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest parts of what makes Gettysburg College a liberal arts college is not talking about what you agree with, but being open to discourse on both sides, and every side saying something's two sides, I guess, is also a bit problematic in some ways. And in terms of Student Senate, I do know that obviously they're going to be looking into the Constitution.
Right.
But also, I do know that you guys are really working towards, you know, fighting facilities.
Definitely.
Working towards, you know, making sure that the living situation for the school is as good as it can be for its students. This is a residential college. And in terms of the presidential search, I do know that Student Senate obviously will be talking about it.
Yes.
And has in the past. For you, Grace, what are you looking for in your next president?
For my next president of the college, I'm a huge fan of President Riggs. I would love somebody who's just as involved with student life, just as concerned about our needs, as well as the administration. I want to be able to see my president and be able to talk to them in order to voice my concerns. I don't want to be a stranger to somebody who's working in Penn Hall. I want to be able to see them, know who they are. And obviously, I want them to be a good leader and have good, you know, good kind of diplomatic leadership, knowing the best interests of the students and just being able to really connect with us, because I think that's a really big asset that we're going to lose with President Riggs, and I hope that we're able to find somebody else who can fill her shoes just as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a great note to end on, so thank you again, Grace, for coming on today.
Oh, thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, awesome, and we will be right back.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Grace Wenzel for being our featured guest today.
We would also like to thank the Gettysburgian staff and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support of this project. Please be sure to subscribe to On Target on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, a senior music major focusing on composition in the Sunderman Conservatory of Music. Be sure to join us next week. We'll talk to Bob Callen, the Vice President for Development, Alumni, and Parent Relations, who will be retiring in early October. Have a great week.